Hi, I'm Carson Block of Zeros TV. Welcome to another edition of Zero Fucks Given. I'm joined by Krista DeLuca. We're now in studio in Austin. And Freddie is in tropical London. looks like he's at a suite at Claridge's. I got to say, when we've done Zoom calls in the past and you're in London, you kind of were always in like, I don't want to say shithole, but I mean, this is
pretty classy.
Look at those fucking fixtures, man.
You know what it is? Finally, my parents are selling the house I grew up in, and we've been allowed to sit in the nice room for the last couple of weeks. After 20-something years of them having this, they're like, oh, we don't need it anymore. You're now allowed to sit in it. So, yeah, we're sitting in what the English would refer to as the fancy dining room or the drawing room.
Oh, okay. All right. So no more shots of the room where you grew up, chained to the radiator, et cetera. So it's good. This is much better back. Much more posh. Befitting of a gentleman with a British accent. Cool. All right. So who wants to kick this off?
How fucking hot is it in Austin today? And how much do you wish you were back in California, Carson?
Well, right here, it's probably about 70 degrees in the office, but I mean, I can't really okay, so what was yesterday? Yesterday felt hot.
It was like 107.
Okay, yesterday was 107. Yeah, man, I gotta say, the weather in Northern California was just astoundingly good. It was cooler than usual, so I think that like Northern California basically gave its heat energy to the rest of the Northern Hemisphere for the month of July, which, and it was fine with me, but yeah, it's fucking hot, you know. And Soren sent me a message the other day saying that he thinks people will actually start leaving Austin as a result of this. So,
really?
Now, well, that's what he said. But my question is, aside from the 3, maybe 4 months of total shit, like it's pretty good here. And
yeah, I
had a lot of conversations with people in California when I was back about what it's like being in Austin. And it was interesting because the point that people thought was the most, well, that they thought was the most fascinating was when I said, look, being in a blue city in a red state, we're mixing with people, or I'm mixed with people who have very different ideological views from my own. And like, everybody's cool. Like my kid plays Little League and, you know, with a lot of Westlake kids. And right before I left, I got to know this one father who's, you know, and I was like, I think I literally was talking about with him, like Elon Musk smacking everybody in the face with his dick. And then that dude was like, hey man, like once a month I have people over to my house to, you know, have guys over to drink whiskey and cognac.
Wait, stop, and rewind. Didn't he also ask if you were?
No. This is where it comes. He's like, so would be great for you to come and hang out. And, you know, we're all Christian conservatives. I'm like, all right, well, listen, bro, I'd love to. I'm an atheist. And I don't know, like when there used to be such a thing as the center, I used to think of myself as left of center. But anyway, so supposedly I will still get the invitation. But that's what I'm talking about. Like people in Northern California were like, wow, like you get to mix with those people regularly. Yeah. And it's civil.
I still got him, Freddie, just so you know, like a little gold cross. Nothing too tacky. Just like, I just want him, you know, I want him to fit in a little bit more.
The cross that you stopped wearing when you realized you were too much of a sinner to
yes. No, that one I did stop wearing because it was diamond. It was flashy. It was tacky. But this one is 100%, you know,
your Jesus 18 piece. Carat.
Yeah, this is my Jesus piece. Exactly. I just want him to fit in. I want him to fit in.
You know what I find funniest about this? It's been, I think, 4 months since I heard about the invite to the prayer meeting. Turns out, you know, they haven't quite gotten back on that yet, have they? They might have watched one or two of these and thought, we'll pass up on that.
I sent them a link to one of them. But no, the prayer meeting invite, I told them I was away July, can't go any sooner than August. So, you know, I'm waiting for it.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, it's interesting. And that did resonate in California when I said, yeah, I talk to people all the time who are, not of the same political stripe, and you know, we can all like root for our kids and stuff and get along. So it's really, really one of the very few places in America like that. And despite the fact that California was so beautiful and the scenery is gorgeous, people are just, it's fucking lame.
Yeah, I agree with them.
Not every single person.
No, no, of course not. But, of course not. No, no.
But there are a lot. I mean, they ruin. It takes so much to fuck that state up, and they did.
Yeah, just the people we meet.
Just the people we meet are lame, or what?
Yeah, just the we didn't meet them all. Just the ones we met.
Just the ones we met. Speaking about sort of like Austin versus San Francisco, I sent you a link, Freddie, to the Austin homeless shelters will have new leadership. California-based Ooh. Urban Alchemy. So I just thought this was so funny because they're like, oh my God, we're being overrun. You know, we need to find new leadership, and they actually went to California for this. Like,
wow.
Is that unbelievable?
Well, yeah, I mean, the...
You know, when I think about leadership, I always used to think that it was a terrible idea that Venezuela are now run by a guy who is, I think, a former bus driver, if I remember correct. But as I think about the homeless problem in Austin, I actually like the idea of electing a California bus driver to show some leadership, come pick them all up and actually take them to San Francisco. So I think Venezuela might be a little bit ahead of the curve. And the only reason I'm so interested in Venezuela at the moment is I'm reading this book. I did buy the book just because of the cover. The title of the book, I think, is brilliant. It's Things Are Never So Bad They Can't Get Worse. It just really appealed to me to read something with that title. So, yeah, Venezuela, way ahead of the curve.
Well, let's be totally honest here, okay? I think the reason you are interested in Venezuela, several years ago, I remember you took a trip to Panama and for fun and, you know, obviously conducting short selling activities because, you know,
clearly
what goes better with short selling geographically,
especially on the beach,
than Panama and Panamanian banks. But you were in Panama and you said that there were all these women from Venezuela, you know, like running around with like huge fake tits. And so you told me
it's true, Freddie,
that Venezuela actually paid for women to have implants. Like that was one of the government
yes.
initiatives. So I would imagine that, like,
is that being, true?
Like I hadn't heard that, but
Freddie, were you being sarcastic?
100% true. It was a heavily subsidized, and this was when like oil was back at 100 and Venezuela, like in theory, had a GDP like similar to Kuwait. They did have heavily subsidized breast augmentation program, which, based on the ones who got out, was used.
Obviously, your interest in Venezuela started with that, but given Venezuela now, I mean, I kind of worry you'd be able to see like the outlines of the logos on the, you know, breast implants from these, you know, starving people. So starving women, I guess, or well, maybe not, you know, but I don't know. Probably don't do the gender identity thing there, do they?
No, it's. I got to tell you, two things I've noticed about LATAM. Me Too really did not take off in any meaningful way in LATAM.
I feel like we should like
remotely. And I don't think, and I've only been to Panama recently, but I don't think I saw a single transgender bathroom in Panama. So they're not just behind in terms of calories consumed per day. It's other social issues too.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, that's worth us going to war over, I'd say.
Clearly.
All right. So anyway, anything else you want to know about California and my return there?
I don't know anything else you want to share. I mean, by the way, Freddie, he's lost 15 pounds. I didn't say 50, 15. Does he look thinner?
Yeah, no, TV puts like 20 on you, so.
So you might be thinking that I went down the road. You know, our place is, you know, just pretty close to the Mark Cohodes Institute of Lap Band Research and Penis Enlargement.
Oh.
And no, that is not how I lost weight. And I certainly would never have, you know, visited the penis enlargement division either. But
of course not.
But of course not. But anyway, no, I
Freddie
did.
Needs the address. I'm just joking.
I mean, back in the day, he would have given you a coupon. But you know, these days, like, no, man. You know, unfortunately. But yeah. No, I lost the weight, but it actually was lingering shit from COVID, dude. I gotta tell you, man. Like, it's. You know, I think I'm past that, but this was not a fun trip to California. You know, this was first 2 weeks just felt absolutely awful from like lingering COVID shit that I had in at the end of April. And, you know, which was mild at the time. So COVID is a bizarre fucking thing. And yeah, then we did a couple of reports while I was out there. So, you know, Hassy good.
Yes.
And Joe Manchin bad. So, yeah, so it was not much of a vacation. I think the most relaxed I was like the last time we did this show and I was sitting there on my deck, you know, outside.
Pathetic.
Yeah, no, it sucked. Really? It sucked. And, you know, I'm capping myself at 45 days a year in California. So that just blew through a lot of my California, like my whole California quota in a very unsatisfying way.
I mean, look, maybe if you took less vacation, just saying.
Yeah, well, you know.
Well, speaking of people who are going on little vacations, there's Brave Nancy Pelosi.
Brave Nancy Pelosi.
All right. So are you sarcastic when you say that?
No.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I think it was astoundingly fucking stupid to get on a plane, poke the bear, and be like, hey, best case scenario, we end up looking tough. Worst case scenario, they actually do follow through, nuke Taiwan, and you start World War III just because you wanted to go and get first-hand read on the chip supply so your husband can trade it. The upside-downside for me just seems tremendously bad on that.
Okay, so I think after we film, I'm going to try to edit that out because I think it'd be incredibly valuable to have Nancy Pelosi as one of our LPs. Had she been one of our LPs, I'm sure we wouldn't have gotten nailed by the Joe Manchin news just like right before we went public on Sunrun. I know. I mean, like that's my thing. It's like there was no way to guard against this unless Nancy Pelosi were an LP. So don't insult Nancy Pelosi, you know, I mean, anymore, because...
Did you see the interview with Kyle that I sent you?
How you're on a first name basis with Kyle Bass.
I am.
I like that.
Well, I thought you were friends with him.
Yeah, but that's good. That
and now I'm an extension of
you. You're friends with him, too.
I did not see it. And just, sorry, just to cut back and really upset you, Carson... I know you think our returns have been decent, not marketing, and not particularly volatile, not marketing. But when you tell Nancy Pelosi that we have losing trades, I think her interest is going to wane somewhat because that's probably a lot less appealing than the kind of alpha she's really thinking about.
Well, look, she probably tanks one every now and then, all right, just for optical reasons. So that would be her assumption, like, oh, that's why you guys were, you know, short, massively short Sunrun right before Joe Manchin signed on to the bill, right? Like, optically, you want to throw one, because that's what I do. But anyway, getting back to the substance of it, I don't know, man. I disagree on all that poking the bear, World War III shit, whatever, because, look, if China's going to invade Taiwan, okay, this will not change their mind about whether they're going to do it. So, and I don't think they're going to invade Taiwan because Nancy Pelosi showed up. If they moved up their timetable, that would be advantageous to us because they are likely not prepared militarily to do it yet. So I think that the China moving up its timetable to own Nancy Pelosi would likely be deleterious to China. But the reality is China is under Xi is just a pure fucking bully. And I'm glad that Nancy Pelosi, who kowtows and genuflex to every far left impulse that makes it on Twitter in the US,
right,
actually has the fucking cojones to go to China and say, fuck you. Now, there are obviously political reasons she's doing that, but yeah, man, I think she speaks for most of America when she says, fuck you, Xi Jinping. So good on her.
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously, if this is the last Zero Fucks Given filmed above ground because China's nuked us and we're in a bunker.
Get your ICBM.
I do want to keep this bit in.
Get that ICBM, okay?
So, turns out I'm not getting my ICBM. I did look into it. Every single part of like being anywhere near the ICBM, having even like an expert come in, moving an ICBM, even if you, I just wanted to move the tip. I did look at like, okay, can we like get the rest of it and just keep the tip and have that poking out the ground? Highly, highly, highly illegal. However,
I want to tell you that's bullshit.
I did just see a friend of mine who went to a wedding at a castle outside of Nottingham, and they had like cannons they were lighting, like old school English, like, you know, cannonball cannons. That looks pretty fucking cool. And as far as I'm aware, not illegal. So a little medieval probably doesn't have the range of an ICBM outside of a North Korean one, but sends a similar message.
Yeah, but there's a real cannon just a couple blocks up at the State House here.
Of course there is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there is. I mean, it won't differentiate you here in Texas, unfortunately. But yeah, it's like an old school cannon. But yeah, just listen, in terms of the World War III thing, maybe you're also a little sensitive because you're no longer in the Austin area or you're not there at present. And I don't know if I said this on a prior episode. I hope I didn't. But I learned from good source that supposedly Round Rock, Texas, which is maybe 45 minutes north of here, is the safest place in the U.S. from an ICBM nuclear attack. So supposedly...
Long story short, who do you think is like looking into move there?
No, just not moving, just buying underground parking garages.
I was literally about to say, I can't believe he believed that real estate agent.
No. Yeah. Imagine the guy's like, I just started my career. They're trying to get me to sell these fucking underground parking garages, you know, like,
of course, Carson's like, what?
Of course that makes sense. What a great idea. So anyway, but yeah, I do that will be I wish I could make that a fund expense, but you know, probably can't.
Why can't we?
I know it's security, right? You might be dead, but we'll still be managing your money.
You know what we could do? We could house our server down there.
You know, that's not a bad idea. I don't know if you caught this, but right before we filmed, I sent out a tweet.
Please saying, go look at it.
Yes.
Please go look at it.
If anybody in asset management has an outsourced IT provider that they don't loathe, please DM me. And the first response... The first response was clip from Pulp Fiction where John Travolta's just like fucking hammered walking into Mia Wallace's house and he's like looking around and can't find anything and stumbling.
It's
and,
so good. Yeah. Right?
The person wrote, looking for that, be like. it's so true.
Good.
These IT provider. Well, I used to be okay with our IT provider, but private equity bought it and I was talking with our COO, Scott, earlier today, and he said, yeah, I think that our firm, their primary clients are in private equity right now. They don't really do a ton of public equity. And I said, you know, that's the thing. Like, when these guys in private equity who are their clients call the help desk, and after waiting like interminable lengths of time, the person picks up and has no idea what the fuck they're talking about. The PE guys are probably like, man, that's some good shit. I love what you did with this. I wish we bought it and cut it to the bone ourselves. Meanwhile, we, it's a little bit different, the reaction that we have. So,
yeah.
But yeah, anyway, that's a great idea. I'll buy the underground parking garage, move in there, and we'll put the servers there too. Everything is falling into place. It'd be great if you could somehow figure out a way to get that ICBM just in case we have to like defend our honor in the post-apocalyptic world, but you know.
Hell, we'll even throw in a little cannon in there. You know what I mean?
Nah, the cannon. Yeah. No.
Well, I mean.
All right, next topic.
Yep.
Well, let's
AMTD Digital.
Let's talk AMTD Digital. And, you know, maybe then we'll get back to homeless shelters. This was a Freddy topic.
It's a fintech company. I'll take over. I'm only kidding. I'm just joking.
This is one of these. It actually really is a Chinese phenomenon. It's not, you know, like partial fraud. Let's do something skeezy. Let's do a pump and dump. It's like, let's take an entirely empty box that literally does nothing and run it up to some obscene amount. Now, this used to happen really frequently in Hong Kong. In fact, we exposed basically an empty box, Superb Summit, back in 2014, December, I think. November 2014. And then we actually had the fortitude a year later to be in Hong Kong and went to their office, and we got them this really nice gift wrapped empty box from Harvey Nichols, which is like a high end department store, and presented it to them at their office. And, you know, Carson was explained. I mean, they were really shaken up. You're at the door. If the DOJ hadn't have seized my phone, we could have showed you the pictures. We're actually at the door, and you know, in like Carson Chinese, he's trying to explain to like, no, this is an empty box because you are an empty box, and she's just like blowing her mind. But lo and behold, we have another one of these.
Carson Chinese?
Yes, I know.
Bro, this was good Chinese. So I wrote character inside empty.
This is really nice.
No, my Chinese was good enough. Like, we went to the door.
By the way, this wasn't 2014, because I was part of this.
No.
Oh.
No, you just wish you were. But, no, then they went to the building, their office, rang the bell, and this woman came and answered it. And I said, you know, I don't know. 我们送给你这个礼物就是一个空的盒子，因为
So get out of here.
That is, we are giving you this present. It is an empty box because your company, and I used 贵公司, which is like a very formal term, like an honorific term, like your esteemed company is an empty box. So anyway.
We've used this theme of the empty box before in New York. Do you remember? That's why I'm thinking.
I used the theme of the empty box in New York.
It was like their company's board meeting, and we had all this stuff.
That was a black box.
Sorry. It was a black box.
Yeah.
It's different than the empty box.
Yeah.
To me, a box is a box.
And that, no, I mean, that had nothing to do with the strip club either.
It always goes back to a strip club.
That was a different trip.
So anyway, once again, we have another one of these empty boxes. The last one I can remember was there was one a few years ago that they suspended. That the ticker will come back to me. It was just outrageous. Like there was just a headquarters in like Canada, and then they realized to be included into the index, they needed to have like a U.S. headquarters. So they moved the PO box from like Canada to the US, and then the market cap shot up like $12 billion. This HKD is brilliant because I think the underlying business is a Hong Kong brokerage. So they took themselves public largely, claimed to have raised $120 million in the deal, although my assumption is it was like about $1 million of retirees in Florida money and then $119 million of the chairman's buddy. And they've manipulated this thing up to about a $400 billion market cap. I mean, it's more right. valuable than Goldman, arguably a more ethical business as well. it's right. it's just, it's this like very Chinese phenomenon of like, let's not stop at 20 billion. Like, let's just take it to 400. Like, let's make it really obvious that we do not give a fuck.
Right. Well, the best part about that, when you think of about the whole situation, is that a bunch of these companies from China are about to be delisted. And so for whatever reason, we're still like in this bent over position, you know, like, oh, another Chinese company come in. And they're like, all right, we're going to totally fuck with these guys. We're going to bring ourselves public, claim to raise $120 million. But yeah, like you said, I'm sure the real money raised, the real float is like a little sliver of nothing. And then just easily ramp the fucking stock by buying this tiny, tiny, tiny amount of float. And yeah, like, I don't know what the ultimate exit is. I mean, of course, this will cause it if they can keep it up here, which probably, given what the real float is, won't cost a lot of money. They'll get included in all the index funds. All these stupid fucks like Vanguard and BlackRock are going to come along and buy it. I mean, because this is the game in Hong Kong, right? They'll slam their bid, make a bunch of money. So I do know what the end game is. And then the thing will collapse. But I'm sure for the Chinese, like, the best part is like, ha, 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 you know, just the egregiousness of the market cap, like right before you delist us, like you are. I mean, it really does make me feel on behalf of America, like, embarrassed and stupid for letting these fucks in when we know that, like, the, you know, we're about to throw the lot of them out. It just, you know, these guys are going to be laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah, I mean, I think once again, it just shows how prepared the exchanges are to hooker themselves. And, you know, along that topic, we've actually got a guest speaker in the next few weeks who has got some really revelatory, interesting commentary on how markets work and certain data that is being provided by exchanges to certain participants that I don't think is widely known. So I don't want to get too into that because I think it's going to be a really interesting discussion. But yeah, once again, well done the exchanges for hookering yourself out for, you know, a dollar or two.
Yeah, I mean, and there's no real investment bank you can criticize in this case, though. It's just amazing that these guys were somehow able to do their own underwriting, a Chinese bank in the U.S. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, somewhere there's a Credit Suisse syndicate furious that they couldn't get on the deal.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, that's a fun one. So it'll be a good one to watch. It probably will, like, this, you know, AMTD should become a recurring segment on the show, just like Tiger and Credit Suisse. And yeah, so that's my vote.
Okay.
And, you know, my vote counts for everything.
Yeah, so. I'm like, then it's done.
Yeah, I mean,
delivered.
I mean, you should at least just, since your vote really doesn't count, you should just eagerly agree with me.
I always agree with you. Okay.
Yeah, he's got one of those like golden share deals, right? Where, you know, it's, you know, one vote carries 100 and then there's like 99 other shares.
Yeah, exactly. It's feeling like such a golden share this week, I gotta tell you. Maybe even fucking platinum. All right, cool. So the next thing on the agenda. Oh, why are you showing me this?
No. The next thing on the agenda.
And why don't you read it? You can read.
No, it's what you were talking. Well, did we already discuss this? Well, empty boxes from China.
how companies respond to short sellers.
Oh,
and
yeah.
with particular emphasis on our two recent reports, HACI and Sunrun.
Oh, yeah.
And then
this is all you.
MNSO, the fastest independent committee ever.
Ever.
So
I thought it would be interesting, just given that Sunrun came out with, you know, a pretty aggressive evil short seller, you know, doing this because the stock squeezed on them. It's like, guys, you have Joe Manchin to thank for that. Don't pat yourselves on the back like you did anything.
Oh, no, they kept bragging about the stock performance since the report. Up 27%, like, you know, kind of flat from the moment we put it out, but whatever.
Yeah. Reminds me of another short seller who sometimes tweets out how well he's done, but is well aware that that has nothing to do with himself. It's largely a function of markets going down. But look, I'm not going to name names.
Right. But this is the one you said would be played by a wardrobe, right? Or armoire. Yes, that one.
It is that same one. You know, what I think is interesting is we often joke that we can write the responses. You know, I think the HACI response was a masterclass in gobbledygook and not actually answering any questions. Sunrun went for the ad hominem attack. And MNSO, the company...
Well, no, I kind of would flip it around on you. I think HACI was much more ad hominem. I think I counted the number of disparaging adjectives at, you know, six or seven in a relatively brief response. Malinformed, ignorant, stuff like that. So HACI was very, very ad hominem, hyperbolic. A lot of little dick energy coming off that small press release, I got to tell you, with HACI. Now, Sunrun definitely had some little dick energy, but they weren't as ad hominem. I mean, of course, every single response that I think I've ever seen to an activist short seller puts report or research in quotes. It's just like, they're such fucking assholes. But at least, and this is kind of rare, at least Sunrun mentioned us by name. I think they usually say something like the short seller report, but they don't want to mention the short seller.
Why do they do that usually?
It's just like a little fuck you, you know, that. But it's so petty. But the reality is, the moment a well-known activist short seller puts out a piece on a company, all the crisis communication firms are like calling the company, and the template is always the same. It's just, hey, say that they're wrong as many times as you can. And this was the Sunrun response, right? So they took a while to respond, but I think the Sunrun response is 7 or 8 pages, so it's pretty lengthy. And they kept saying that we were wrong, I mean, even when it came to things that we didn't talk about. So, but that's pretty typical, right? Answer the questions you wish you'd been asked instead of the questions you actually have been asked. And that was pretty, so the Sunrun response I thought was pretty pro forma. HACI was, as I said, more defensive, more little dick energy than I would expect. And then that guy went on CNBC and, you know, it was just, we put out that morning, just three simple questions that guy had to answer, the Hannon Armstrong CEO. And the questions weren't asked well, but when he was asked.
But he didn't answer.
No, right. How much non-cash, unrealizable income, meaning it will never be received as cash, did HACI book in 2021? And so he was asked that. And he's like, we answered that in our response. It's like, no, you didn't. And that's the thing that just killed me, that, you know, she let him get away with that. Like, no, you didn't answer it. Say it, bitch. It's about $300 million when you reported $127 million in net income.
Yeah.
yeah, like way nice with this guy. But anyway, that was, yeah, that was like whatever. The Hasse was amusing, and they just won't answer that question. And it's kind of funny because like the sell side analysts, I mean, sell side analysts are always just, they are what they are, right? They're there to be like, decorations on the wall, effectively.
You know what? I think you're being too nice to sell side analysts because I'll tell you what, I think if you go way back like 15 years ago, some of those sell side analysts cared enough about their reputation and there was enough money in it that they wanted to be superstars. Now they really suck. There was a time 15 years ago where if you were a really good sell side analyst, you were actually, your compensation was very competitive with the best analysts at hedge funds, and effectively the banks were competing to keep you out of the claws of the buy side. And I think the intellectual dishonesty, in many cases, the inability to engage with critics or people who are hostile. Look, occasionally, to their credit, there are some analysts that have engaged with us. There are others who refuse to, even though we make it very clear we will keep that communication between ourselves, and it's not some kind of, pissing competition where we're trying to scream at them that we're 10 times smarter and we've done 15 times more work. We genuinely want to have an intellectual debate, and what we're hoping to get out of that is maybe the analyst walks away and says, okay, these are a couple of areas I am less familiar with. I could prod a little bit harder there on an earnings call or, even privately follow up with the company to understand that. And I think they proactively bury their heads in the sand. I actually think it's pretty revolting.
Oh, absolutely. Well, what I was going to say though is when you get to the like green tech companies, I mean, these guys are particularly, the sell side analysts are particularly just, I mean, sycophantic. They're just gross, basically. And I mean, that's the thing. That's what all of, going back a few years, I was looking at getting solar panels on the house in
So was I,
California,
yeah.
because I thought like, maybe that's a good idea. And we never did. Just I did have concerns that that could be a fire risk with embers getting trapped underneath it, burning a hole in the roof and, burning the whole house down. But what I know now, just these companies are so full of shit. I'm not convinced that these solar panels actually net remove carbon when they're made in China with coal-fired power and apparently like slave labor in Xinjiang. I'm not convinced that these things are net negative in terms of carbon emissions when you look at solar panels, but it's like it so reminds me of the feeling that I got after living in the Bay Area for a while, because it became clear in the Bay Area that you could rob a bank, come out, and if the cops were there, you'd be like, I'm a trans Native American. And they'd be like, oh, okay, well, go right ahead. So if you're like saving the world, nobody asks questions. Or if you're a marginalized person in San Francisco. So no, these guys don't ask questions because everybody wants to hug a fucking solar panel. Like they're so nice and cuddly. And it's just, so that's how these analysts are. And
Kind of makes some
I was
points.
just listening to the Sunrun Q2 call.
He was.
and so the CEO, Mary Powell, it's just funny listening to her. They're based in San Francisco, of course. It's like, yeah, and so look, we crushed it, and it was an awesome quarter. And so then the first analyst they call on is this Julian whatever from B of A. And I mean, this guy was so enthusiastic. He's like, oh, just fantastic quarter. And like you could hear it in his voice. And so before Mary Powell answers the fake question, she actually says, well, Julian, thank you for that enthusiasm. Like he exceeded her level of enthusiasm. That's how fucking ridiculous this whole like sell side analyst charade is, especially in like the green tech ESG bullshit space. So anyhow, yeah, that's the quality of like, quote analyst we're dealing with. Let's just put analyst in quotes, from now on. But or Or analyst.
Yeah, we no, you know what? That's what we should start doing. Analyst.
Yeah. Sell side analysts. Yeah. Fuck them. They always put report and research. They do the same thing. They seldom mention Muddy Waters also. Let's just treat them with the lack of respect which they actually are due, versus, of course, I think we're due a lot of respect and they show none.
Yeah. And then look, I don't wanna be remiss. I do wanna give a shout out to Miniso, the ticker's MNSO. I don't even want to talk about the report. I just want to give them credit for putting out the fastest ever on record, I think, special committee review. I think from announcing it to turning it around and saying that everything was fine was about 48 hours, which that's the fastest I'm aware of.
That beats even Tal. I think Tal took maybe 5 or 6 days in 2018. So, yeah, no, that's...
To be fair, they could have done that in about 12 minutes, but they needed to allow enough time for Teng Yue to back up the truck and, you know, call Bill Huang and be like, no, this is another education one that's a fraud. We should buy the fuck out of it. Yeah. No, Bill, yeah. Yeah. No, can you move some swap over? Yeah, if you could. Yeah, that would give us a little bit more headroom because, you know, we can only buy like 10% of the company on swap. Yeah, that's why that took 6 days.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you know, also like Archegos might have needed to have opened another PB account or two in the meantime. So I could see that. Full disclosure, we are short Miniso, but I think we should put that out there for we're obviously short Hassy and Sunrun, hence we talk about them. Yeah, so once again, Chinese companies setting the standards of excellence. I mean, really, I think just holding up a mirror to our markets and basically saying, there's so much bullshit in the US. Like, we're just a little bit more over the top than you guys are. Okay, maybe a lot more, but still. It's just the most egregious version of all the shit that's going on day in and day out here in the U.S. anyway. So by lots of guys who have memberships at good country clubs that I would never get into.
Never.
You wouldn't because you're Italian. Cool. You wouldn't because you're a Jew. And I wouldn't because I'm me. True. So.
There you go.
You know, Krista, he's just lashing out because they uninvited him to the prayer group. There's a club for us, don't you worry.
I know, there's a club for me, definitely. I'm a different league, clearly.
You'd be.
I'm the office manager at.
Look, you would do fine until you like started talking.
Oh, that's lovely. So nice, isn't it? Thank goodness I get paid well.
Nice.
And we can end on that.
There we go. Like, 10 million VND bonus.
I know, yeah, exactly.
That's good pay. Sounds good. All right, well,
okay.
Thank you for joining us. And we look to forward to doing this a little bit more regularly now that I'm here and I guess Freddie will be back at some point. So till then.
Cheers.
Fail and set sail.
Fail and set sail.
Fail and set sail.